Rock breath. Ben, remember to turn off your phone.
Okay.
Where is my
phone? Is it raining out already?
Yes, a little bit.
I think in California, the fear of rain is worse than the rain itself.
Oh, I think, well, there's something to that. We don't like rain here.
It's the only state where I've ever been where people talk about the rain like
it's a disaster.
Yeah, it does leave gaping potholes in the street.
It's true. I don't like it. That's for sure.
There he is. There's Ken LaCourt. Ken, you look great.
No, I do not look great. Right. Don't lie to me. Don't.
But he has a big blue thing running through his face.
Claudia.
No, he has a big blue thing running through his face.
Well, he still could look great with a big blue thing running through his face.
Yes, that's very kind of you.
It was better a second ago. Like, yeah. Keep going.
Maybe it's. Get it, but then I'm dark. Hang on, let me get.
No,
it.
You're not dark. And there's nothing wrong with being dark. We accept all people on this show.
Right.
You look great, Ken.
Man, let's. God damn it.
Okay, perfect.
All right.
You guys ready? Ben, phone off?
No. Just a minute. Okay.
Claudia?
Yeah?
Could you help me?
Okay, now we're done.
Okay. Gary's on his house. Gary's on his RV. Ken's on his house.
Gary, wait, whoever has that blue thing doesn't have it anymore.
That's Ken LaCourt.
And you don't have that blue thing anymore.
Good.
You're
right.
Good. Great. Okay.
You do not have that blue thing running through your face anymore.
I want to welcome everybody to the world, according to Ben Stein, where we have absolutely no rules. As Ken said, it feels like a bunch of friends speaking at a bar. And for that reason, Gary decided to have a few brews. But I want to welcome everybody to the world according to Ben Stein. I want to thank everybody that's listening on our YouTube stream and that follows us. I want to, of course, welcome our guests tonight. We have a few great ones. We have Media Maverick, and I say that with all the sincerity in the world. He helped start Fox News, helped launch Fox News. I was thinking about this the other day when I was thinking about how big Bill O'Reilly came and the geniuses you guys were. That Bill O'Reilly was working at Inside Edition. And I was thinking, who, like they took a guy from Inside Edition and he became the biggest media star in America, Ken.
He was hitching that wagon to the star of conservatism.
Look, Bill was the interesting thing, Bill was an authentic guy. I mean, you know, and that authentic guy was kind of a you know, the biggest, smartest, blowhard Irish guy in the bar, but it worked very, very well for him. And he was what you saw on TV, and that's a big part of what made him so successful.
But he was a conservative, as the red tide was washing over America, the conservative tide, which I believe is still washing over America, if we did not have problems with the fair counting.
We surmise. We don't talk about fair, unfair counting. We just it was all
let
fair.
It be. When it I find myself fair. In times of trouble.
Yeah, it was all fair. But of course,
me speaking words of wisdom, let it be.
And of course, let's welcome our other guest, the man who metaphorically teaches people how to live off the grid, the great and the real Gary Collins. Welcome back, Gary.
Thank you.
So I love it. You're in an RV. Ken's on a houseboat. Ben's in his office above his one of the most amazing offices anybody could ever step inside. And I want to welcome everybody that's listening. But of course, this show wouldn't be complete without former NASA astronaut Benjamin Stein. No, lawyer, actor, and all around
economist.
What
lover?
Yes, and America's
dog fancier,
Benjamin,
longtime husband and father and grandfather.
Yes, and man of the people. But I want to welcome everybody. But I want to get something right away. I grew up in New York. I grew up idolizing two people. I grew up idolizing Donald Trump, and I grew up idolizing George Steinbrenner. The correlations between the two of them are absolutely frightening. They shared two things in common. They both loved winning and they both loved their fans. In between, sometimes they made a few goofy or bad moves. George Steinbrenner, all he ever wanted to do is win for his fans, and he bought players. He did whatever he could. He surrounded himself oftentimes by people that weren't good for him. But something happened. He got banned from baseball for a year or two, and he let Gene Michaels take over. And Gene Michaels and the rest of those people put an amazing farm system, and there grew the dynasty. And it was a lot of nurture. And when Steinbrenner came back, he was a bit of a changed man, and he let those people that he trusts build run the dynasty. And I see a lot of parallels right now, or possible parallels, with the future of the president of the United States, which I think in 2024, Donald Trump will be the you know, again, in the Republican Party. Sorry to the people who still think he has a chance now, but that is what I'm opining, Mr. Ben Stein.
I don't have any idea about 2024. I hope he's still in good health. I hope all of us here, especially yours truly, since I'm by far the oldest, I hope we're all in good health. I am in terrible fear and uncertainty about the present. 4 years from now looks like miracle land if we can get there in one piece. And I just hope and pray we can. And I hope and pray that we as Americans will put our duty as Americans ahead of party or partisanship of any kind, and always at all times do what's best for the country.
And I know, Ken, my analogy might be a bit of a stretch, but them two got along very well. You know, Trump did idolize Steinbrenner, and there are a lot of similarities of them being those types of people.
Yeah, go on to the next guy. I know nothing about sports. I'm sorry.
Oh, man. Like, and neither does Gary.
One part of my brain that I fill up with knowledge. And I know Steinbrenner because I watched Seinfeld.
Neither does Gary. So I'll go with this. Here's the biggest story that I saw today was that Liz Cheney's approval ratings in Wyoming she's disliked by 73% of Wyoming in the last. So if people think that people aren't going to stay with Trump, I would warn them.
Well, yeah. I'm sorry. You're talking to Ken. I beg your pardon.
I don't really know. Look, there are two halves of Trump supports, and I don't know kind of where that goes. There are the people who are like, he is an imperfect vessel to get what I want done. I'm a conservative. He's a bull in a china shop, and he's getting crazy stuff done in a good way. And I'm not really in love with him as a person. And there's that is one part of his support. And I don't know whether that's 20, 30, 40, 50%. And then there are the other people that are like, you know, he's the only person in politics I trust. A Bush equals a Cheney equals a Clinton. They're all that kind of same group of people. They all somehow went to Yale or the places where Ben went to college, and all you smart guys. And it all works out for those guys, and they're doing great. And me and my life isn't. And I think they're all working for one another. And I trust Trump over the entire swamp. And I definitely think that his support is cleaved into those two portions. I don't know how much of each is each in that, though. But maybe, if we now believe polls, maybe that tells us something.
I think we are facing a severe crisis immediately into the Biden presidency on several different fronts, several crises on several different fronts. And it scares me to death that President Biden is talking about bull in a china shop, is charging off in all directions, trying to please the extreme left wing of his party when there are extremely pressing problems right here and now that need to be solved. We do not need to be looking for pie in the sky solutions that are found only in the most starry eyed and foolish college professors. You're losing your sound, Judah. You're losing your sound.
Gary, I know you have a deep love of the Cheneys, but what I find so ironic about Liz Cheney in this whole thing is the first person Trump pardoned was Scooter Libby, the guy that actually fell on the sword for the cabal that was the Cheneys and the Bushes. And the loyalty, obviously, she will be
only one way.
Yeah, she will be primaried, and she could go hunting with her dad. But Gary, what are your thoughts on this?
Stay behind him is all I got to say. He's deadly to the face with a shotgun. And first of all, Judah, I do know sports. See, I grew up with Roger Staubach, was my hero, and Eddie Van Halen.
I got a great story for you.
So my redneck heritage, party in the front, business in the back. That's how I dichotomy of those two. But, you know, for me, you know, any name with Cheney and Bush is part of the deep state. I hate to break it to people, but that's the way it is. So I've never been a fan of Dick Cheney or his daughter, either one. And I think she's about ready to learn a valuable lesson of, you know, when you jump in, the whole thing is stupid, right? I mean, they're trying.
Sorry, Gary, the whole thing is, I missed that last word. The whole thing is
stupid in the sense that they're trying to impeach an outgoing president. He's gone. It's a waste of my taxpayer dollar. It's a waste of our time. And the fact she jumped on that pile just tells me you're part of the ship of fools. So even if she wasn't a Republican in Wyoming, it wouldn't matter to me. I don't care.
She's just not very smart. I mean, that's the kind of scary thing. Is that she's not very smart. And I knew Mr. Cheney when, as one might say, long, long, long ago when he was on the domestic council under Mr. Ehrlichman, who was a very nice guy, a really, really nice guy. And Mr. Cheney then did not have a reputation for being incredibly smart. Nothing happened to make anyone think he was incredibly smart. I mean, he didn't get 800 on the math SATs suddenly while he was in his 30s or 40s. I don't know why people got the idea that was an incredibly smart family to come from. And I think all the data is telling us exactly the opposite.
Well, he didn't speak a lot. And that's something about, like, it leads to a mystique of you being sometimes often smarter. Sorry, Ken, you wanted to say something.
I was going to say, look, I'm not going to criticize Dick Cheney. He is such a gangster that he shot his friend in his face, and his friend apologized. I'm sorry for getting in between you and the quail, Mr. Cheney. Could you imagine getting shot in the face and being like, oh, dude, I'm sorry. It was my fault.
Well, not only
that, I'm not saying crapola about Dick Cheney on this call.
Wasn't he a little pissed off at his friend or something? Didn't they?
Yeah, he got in between him and the shot, man. Yeah. That bird made it.
Yeah.
No, but Ken, I think it goes more to the point of what you were saying, though, with her approval ratings tanking to, you know, 73%, literally them going reverse, I think, from 73% favorable to 73% unfavorable. Or 63% disapproval throughout the whole state. And I think the Trump base is strong, and it is. I don't think they're going to forget, and I don't think they are going to forgive. I think you'll see a lot.
They shouldn't forget. Yeah.
And I think you'll see a lot of people become independents. I think you'll see a lot of people start to register as independents. I keep on getting these inundated with these emails now from the GOP saying, please donate. And I got to be honest with you guys, I don't see a lot of donations going to the GOP right now.
Well, they're not going to be a lot going from you, but there may be a lot going from somebody else. But I've said this before, I'll say it over and over again, we always count the Republican Party out whenever they've had a problem, and they always come back. And as I've said many times, the Republican Party is the moral base of this country. There's a Republican Party that said slavery is immoral and disgusting and was willing to go to war to free the slaves. That is always forgotten by the African Americans. It's always forgotten by the commentators, but it's an incredibly noble act in human history. And the Republican Party, I think, can claim a certain moral nobility that no other political party anywhere in the world can claim just for that.
Ken?
I wasn't around in 1860, so I'm not going to claim too much.
Well, I wasn't around either, but we could. There are history books, sir.
Look, I'd be interested to hear when the Republicans lost. I mean, look, certainly in the 60s, late 60s, mid late 50s to late 60s, I would say the Republicans probably lost black support during that period.
I think it had a lot to do with Mr. Goldwater in 1964, actually.
Goldwater.
And had to do with Lyndon Johnson.
And Lyndon Johnson had a whole lot to do with that, too. I mean, Lyndon Johnson wasn't a big fan of the blacks, but he certainly used them very, 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 very brilliantly.
Very, very brilliantly. And I must say, if you read books about Lyndon Johnson and his way of characterizing African-Americans, it will stun you, and it will just blow your brains out that the blacks are such fans of the Democrat Party when they're the guy who set the template for the Democrat Party was so unbelievably condescending and nasty to black people.
Yes, look, we're in an interesting period of time where this was the first time in a while that blacks forcefully reached out and grabbed some more political power. And we saw that happen very successfully. I mean, they got billions of dollars into their causes. They had the now president on his knees with a mask in the church. They've got, you know.
I'm sorry, say that again. They had the what?
I don't exactly remember what I said, but they have gathered in political power more than at any other point in my sentient lifetime. And I'm 55, so let's say from the mid 70s to now. This Black Lives Matter movement grabbed them more money and politicians on their knees they tried to revitalize racial preferences in California. California turned that down, but 80% of the Democratic politicos in California supported putting racial preferences back into our state law. And it's kind of, in one hand, it's an impressive political feat, whether you believe them or not, or whether you like it or not, and I hated it. The downside is the things that they are getting, I think, is actually going to hurt the black community. I mean, the concept that, rose up as power and we took this power, and what are we going to do? We're gonna cut the cops in our neighborhood.
Yeah, like, brilliant.
You know what black neighborhoods need? They need three times as many cops as they have right now.
Right.
Because I'd rather blow my brains out than open up a store in most black neighborhoods in America. Because it's miserable. You go into a black grocery store in a black neighborhood. The prices are more expensive than in white neighborhoods because they've got so many crime problems and shoplifting and all the things that come out with that. I mean, crime has gotten out of control in that. And so what do they do when they grab power? Well, let's reduce the cops because they're often jerks to us. I mean, I get it. It's a childish reaction because often cops are just jerks to black people. And every black guy I know, including some very successful and accomplished people, you know, they're put off understandably by being targeted more often, being watched in stores and whatnot. But what the black community needs is some law and order, some dads, some people saying study or I'm going to beat your ass and go to school. I mean, that's what's going to save black America and bring them into the fold of America, not the crap that we just saw them get, which is billions of dollars into BLM, which is nicey nice talk on the sports things and corporations turning their logos black and being like, oh, sending out their crappy virtuous signals to show that they love those people. And it's all working negatively towards the black community, and it's depressing as hell.
You know, it's
depressing, and I must say, it is. You're totally right. What the black community needs, in my humble opinion, could be totally wrong, is exactly the opposite of what the Democrats are giving it. Exactly the opposite of what BLM is giving it. There's no recognition of reality in what either BLM or the Democrat Party is giving the African Americans. On the other hand, it's their lives. It's not up to me to control their lives,
America.
But it is my, I'm one of many, many, many people paying taxes. It's some of it is my money. I hate the idea that it's just being thrown down this rat hole. I look forward to the day when there is an audit of BLM's money. We find out how much of it has actually gone to any useful purpose.
And sadly, what both of you are talking about, the biggest celebrity name that ever was, that was outspoken on this is in prison right now. Mr. Cosby,
because he was
extremely open and honest about this, Gary, about this subject. I mean, you come from the worst of the worst, Gary, as far as you're actually one of those people that got out of abject poverty, and you've worked your butt off into an RV somewhere in America.
moving on up, my friend.
And but this is an important thing, Gary, because this is what you teach about. This is what you talk about, is this self-help, is getting out of this, you know, vicious cycle that the Black community can't get out of.
Well, and growing up that way, when I went to college, and like I said, my story, my high school counselor had to fill out my application because my parents didn't know how to do it. That, you know, when I went to college, I didn't get accepted to a lot of schools that I thought I should have gotten into. And it was because reverse discrimination was high at that time when I went in, was going to college. I didn't understand that.
When was that, Gary?
1988. I was applying in 87, and I didn't understand it because I remember I went to college and befriended a college professor, and we were talking, and he goes, well, what other schools did you apply to? And I went like, oh, UC Irvine and UC Santa Barbara. And he goes, you didn't get into any of those? And I go, I got into one school, San Diego State. Why do you think I'm here? And he kind of looked at me and goes, okay, son, I'm going to explain something to you. And he explained to me how reverse discrimination worked. I didn't know. I was a dumb redneck from the middle of nowhere. I had no clue. And when I heard, I went, well, that's not fair. And I remember him looking at me and going, yeah, life's not fair. And he goes, but you're in college. And I just kind of had to blow it off. And I just went, you know, okay, fine. I'm in college. I'll make the best of it. And not poor me. I think I was almost heartbroken at the time that I'd busted my butt, worked as hard as I possibly could, and I didn't do anything wrong, and yet I was penalized because I was.
Yeah, I hate to call it reverse discrimination. It was discrimination.
Yeah, I think it's very well put, Ken. Very well put.
And it's I went through the same thing. It's like my entire goal while I was in college was to get into a good law school. And when I got right to the starting line, I looked around and it was like, if I was a different color, I'd be at Stanford. And
I will tell you, if I may, I was a law teacher at Pepperdine, a school I'm very, very, very fond of, that my family has been connected with forever, basically since it was founded in the Malibu campus. And I taught a large securities law class for year after year. Only once did I have an African-American student. As far as I can tell, he never was prepared for any class ever. He had never done his homework ever for one class. When came time for them to get jobs, he was the only kid in the class, boy or girl, who was taken by a major New York Wall Street highly paid law firm. Only one. And this kid was a pathetic, pathetic wreck of a student. And he's maybe improved, maybe he became a great student. The discrimination was absolutely outrageous.
And if nobody ever hears from us again, that is Ben Stein, that's Gary Collins, that's Ken LaCourt. I'm Judah Friedman. Sorry, Gary. Sorry, Ken.
If I can take a quick note, Ben, I went to Pepperdine for a year, which is, as you know, a Church of Christ school. And we had a joke because, you know, we weren't allowed to dance on campus, but
that was then, they can now.
They did have some married dorms, and the student's joke was, why can't Church of Christ couples have sex standing up?
Because it would look too much like dancing.
Yes! Because God might think they're dancing.
Sir, I'm going to tell you, if I may, with the greatest possible respect, they have an incredibly beautiful campus in Malibu at Las Virgenes and at PCH. My father, God rest his soul, was with Mrs. Seaver, the donor for that big thing, and helped turn the first spade full of earth. That is how far back our family connection goes with Pepperdine. And it's a great school. It's a wonderful, wonderful school. I have been in nothing but praise for Pepperdine, but this is just the way the world works. And it was a very sad thing to me for the students in the class who had worked hard and had done their assignments and did not get plum job offers.
And if you just tuned in, you are listening to The World According to Ben Stein. I will, the YouTube chat is back up. Sorry if it was out, we had nothing to do with it. You could find us at benstein@substack.com. You could also find us on all the streaming places where you could download your stuff on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google, on whatever service is going to kick us off and eventually anyways. But I want, you were joined tonight by Gary Collins at Simple Life Now. Is that correct, Gary?
TheSimpleLifeNow.com. The Simple Life Now. Nothing to do with Paris Hilton and Paul Richards.
Right. Or the other Gary Collins. And of course, Ken LaCourte, what's the name of your website?
It's MediaActionNetwork.com.
MediaActionNetwork.com. And we're actually talking about real stuff. And I could actually just sit and listen to you guys, which I plan on doing after I introduce this next segment, which is basically sort of ties into what you guys are talking about. But I brought this up the other night. There's an old tradition in Judaism that we don't have juniors. We don't name people after the living because we don't know how that person is going to, you know, you don't want to be named after a murderer. You know, you don't want, or a bank robber or a pedophile or something. You don't want to have that be your namesake. So we wait until a person dies and their life is judged. And then we say, okay, we'll name that person after them. But as I look at what's going on in San Francisco yesterday, where the school system decided to ban all our ex-presidents' names pretty much from, George Washington to Lincoln.
Wait a minute, Judah. I'd like you to humor a stupid, uninformed dope like me and tell me, I don't know a thing about this. Tell me about this.
The San Francisco schools, sorry, Gary.
That's two dopes.
Okay, the San Francisco, Ken, you're familiar with this since I sent you the story. San Francisco school system decided that they will take the names George, you know, Washington High School or Junior High School or whatever. They will take the names Lincoln, Jefferson, all because, you know, of slavery. And
wait a minute, why take off Lincoln's name?
Yeah, the Indians.
Because I'm sorry, sir.
Because of the Indians, he was nasty to some Native Americans.
And is that true, or are you just...
No, there was some uprising, and he killed some, or, you know, he allowed some of them to be executed, and it was their primary problem.
So they took the name of Abraham Lincoln off.
Yes, they voted for that, and they wanted to do Roosevelt, I believe, but the school board didn't know if it was Theodore, didn't know if it was FDR, and nor did they know. They didn't know anything. I don't even think they knew Roosevelt was a president. Yeah. And sorry, Ken?
They didn't like either Roosevelt, I'm told.
They didn't like either Roosevelt. And it brought me to thinking to myself, it's like people don't realize how frightening this is, but people don't realize they're coming for you next. I mean, eventually Martin Luther King Jr. in today's BLM won't be black enough.
He was sleeping with white girls.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. Many. Nobody these days is safe from this type of so Ben Stein, I mean, I know I just brought that story on you, but it's a frightening thing.
It's a terrible, horrible thing, and I hardly know what to say. On the other hand, I am bound to say the history of this country is made much more complex by the fact that we were a slave-holding country, and long after the time when other European countries had banned slavery, we still had plenty of it. And that's a horrible thing. But what is always forgotten, endlessly forgotten, never mentioned, is that America is the only country in the world in which the majority, most powerful, dominant ethnic part of the population went to war and lost their lives in enormous numbers to free the non-majority subjugated part of the population. That's never happened before, where the majority master race went to work and went to war and lost their lives in huge numbers to save the wretched subjugated people. That's never, you cannot find another example of that anywhere in history.
Ken?
I think it's a really tricky and almost never morally applicable thing when you try to apply the morals of today to 50 years ago, 100 years. I mean, certain things are right and wrong always, but we in this generation, we are going to be judged very, very harshly on something. I don't know what that is. Now, maybe in 200 years, we're going to discover that cows and pigs really were more sentient than we thought, and we were evil people for basically committing a different kind of genocide against chickens and fish and all of that. It could be the way that we treat mentally handicapped people in this country, which is friggin' horrific. I mean, you can go in San Francisco and see mentally screwed up people that if they had a broken leg, we would be calling the ambulance and picking them up and taking care of them. But when they're eating their fingers and on drugs and whacked out, we're kind of like, you know, I don't know what we'll be judged on, but you know, I'll never forget talking to my parents because, you know, clearly putting Japanese people in an internment camp because you're afraid of them in the war, in by our judgment, seems very, very wrong. Up in my office, I actually have one of the internment camp notices. And it's, to me, it's an example of government overreaching. But when you talk to my parents' generation, who say, yeah, look at what the Japanese were doing as they were, you know, when they were hopscotching across islands, they were murdering and raping, and they were an awful, awful force to deal with. And did we view people who just 2 years ago said, yeah, I'm from Japan, but now I'm an American as the same as that? They were like, no. And look at all of the, you know, look in California. We certainly didn't have a whole lot of you know, local Japanese helping out the Japanese who were literally in the process of trying to murder us all. So it's, I just find it too comforting and wrong to judge prior generations too harshly by our current standards. And again, someday they're going to be looking at us and saying, oh, you know, Ben Stein ate a hamburger. He is an awful human being, or whatever that is. And it maybe something will surprise me. Maybe I'm wrong on all this transgender stuff.
No,
I think that's next, by the way.
You're right. I think it's going to, it will happen.
Gary, what say you?
I'll be dead at 1 minute.
Well, I have one major question, which me and Ken talked about earlier today when I interviewed him for my podcast. While they were doing this and they were banning all these presidents' last names, did they break into interpretive dancing? That's all I want to know. Did they do it in such a way, a classy way? And also, it's, you know, if it's tasty, it doesn't count. So cows, pigs, I'm sorry, chicken, it's tasty. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm sorry. I like animals. I like the way they taste.
And by the way, getting into it, but what Ken just brought up, whoever thought that the Kinks' Lola would be such a prophetic song and taken upon in schools.
Now that again is something I don't know anything about.
Well, Lola.
Dude, keep your references from 1955 to 1975.
Ben's a
huge fan. I know the song very well. I know the song extremely well. But what's the problem?
Lola was about a transgender.
I know that, but what is the?
Because that's what they're teaching young people in schools right now.
It's become part of the
curriculum that boys could be girls and girls could be boys. It's a mixed up world, all shook up for my Lola.
And a loose reference.
Yeah. And it's a little, yeah, but these are frightening times. I mean, these are absolutely, you know, teaching 5 and 6 year olds and 7 year olds, these sort of lessons we are going down a really slippery slope. I don't have children. Ben, you have a grandchild.
I have a grandchild and I have a son. I love them both very much.
Who's out of school. And we were going through some absolutely frightening times in the first, 14 days of where do we go next? I mean, this is absolute, the science denial of men and women right now is absolutely frightening to me.
I find that almost everything that's happening now is frightening. I find the fact that Mr. Biden promised a gigantic progress on COVID. And so far as I know, at least here around me, it's getting worse and worse and not better and better. Although here in California, suddenly the Democrat Gavin Newsom has decided he can open the restaurants, whereas when the Republicans were in the White House, they couldn't be open. So I don't know what miracle occurred that made that happen.
Totally coincidentally, the recall petition signatures hit about 1.4 million this week,
which is about 100,000.
How many more does it need?
That's very, very close to it. It's about 1.5, 1.6. They've got about a 98% chance of qualifying that for the ballot.
Great. But anyway, I don't see what great is happening here in America that's going to retrieve us from this terrible situation of ignorance. Again, I go back to the fact that Americans don't know history. I look at AOC. She, to me, is just a perfect, pristine, crystal clear example of ignorance. If she had any idea of what a great country this is and had any idea of what this country has accomplished in terms of human rights as compared with the rest of humanity, I think she would be deeply ashamed of all the things she said about America. But I don't see that happening. I don't understand Mrs. Rice. I don't understand her at all saying that the wealth gap among and between the races is going to be one of her main priorities, or if not her main priority. What's she going to do? How is she going to solve that problem? What are they planning to do? I mean, this sounds like just out and out highway, literally highway robbery. I mean, what are they planning to do?
Ken?
What are they planning on doing? They'll do exactly what they've been doing, which is give mollycoddling talk, put in high profile blacks who they like to say, we love blacks, to pretend as though Kamala Harris is went from I want freedom to the vice presidency.
But she isn't even black. I mean, that whole idea that she's black, that's just a con.
She's not even close to black.
Right this minute, Judah is blacker than her.
Yes, yes.
Sorry, just
well, that in itself is a gigantic con. The number of people who died from COVID was a gigantic con. There are just so many gigantic cons going on now. It's kind of terrifying. And God bless Mrs. Harris. I hope she does well in life. I'm sure she's a fine human being. And I would like her just as much if she were black, but she's not. And I think that's a con game that's played on the American voter.
But just for the record, I am just.
The fact that what you asked, there isn't a good answer. What are they going to do? I mean, let's the other side of that coin is, I sure wouldn't want to be born to a black mom in most of America right now.
I couldn't agree more.
And that sucks. Those kids are not starting off on home plate. They're starting off beneath it.
I agree.
They've got one parent. They're in poverty most often than not. They've got gangs in their neighborhoods, and they've got a neighborhood that the safest place to be is with a gang and crime and whatnot. They've got rampant drug use that is used by most or a good chunk of their friends and relatives and people who live near them. They've got politicians who condescend to them and say this crap about BLM and all this stuff to make them kind of, they're tossing their little pieces of candy out there. They don't have education that is important in their life. And man, you got the deck stacked against you if you're a 7-year-old black kid in America.
I couldn't agree more. But what is Mrs. Harris or what is Mr. Biden going to do to fix that? I mean, I look at the Vietnamese. I look at the Hispanics. They come here with nothing. Their family lives are extremely disrupted. Their families, many of their families have been murdered by the states they came from, the nations they came from. Somehow they learn that they have to work and be disciplined to make their way up to middle-class status.
100%. They had other things.
Instead of that, the blacks are taught Uncle Sam is going to make it happen by waving a pen.
Yep. No, and it sucks because you're right. I mean, those guys who came in off the boat from other countries, especially Asian countries, came here with some things in their pocket that worked. The love of family, the understanding
yes.
how important that
yes.
was.
Yes, yes,
helping out
yes.
their community. You get an education or I will beat the... I mean, look... My dad didn't make it past eighth grade, but I would have gone through a wall if I didn't go to college because he would have sent me through that wall. It was never an option. That was never on the table. He was, he did well as a blue collar worker. And it was like, you're going to college or you will die. And it was like, that helped. That helped me become a white collar guy living in Sausalito on a houseboat with a beautiful fiance and all that fun stuff. And those things are missing in too much of society.
Mazel tov on the fiance, Gary.
Here's the biggest travesty of it all. These neighborhoods, as a former law enforcement guy too, and criminal justice professor, all that good stuff. So I have some knowledge in this. The problem is also that these neighborhoods aren't just some of the most violent in the country. Some of these neighborhoods, especially in Chicago, predominantly black, are the most dangerous in the world. In the wow. world, not just yeah. the country. These are hellholes. And we've talked about this. The equalizer is education, not corrupt public education. Education that actually teaches you how to be a better person, how to get out, not how to be part of the system. That's the problem. And Kamala Harris and President Joe Biden are now, they're going to do what they've always done. They're going to pass stricter drug laws. I mean, they're going to put their boot right on their neck. That's what their history has shown. And I'm a nonpartisan guy, but that's what these people have done. And Kamala Harris, it's proven. She's on record. She has done it. She has actually not let out people who she put on the death penalty, on death row, because of a fact that they didn't get the evidence in on time. And she wanted to cover her ass. She's a horrible person. She's a terrible person.
Ben's very kind when he says, just the people on YouTube, Ben, when he says I'm sure she's a very fine human. That's like Ben's just a very kind and good soul. And he likes to wish the best on people. Just so
well,
people
I do
know.
Too. But yeah. I also realize when evil's evil,
yeah.
Bad's bad. I'm a little more black and white guy. No pun intended there. But you know what I mean? It's just bad's bad. When you have a history and a track record that shows nothing but, you're a butt. That's all I can say. And she
it's a very, very, very bad situation. But may I respectfully say something? I don't see anything that the Democrat Party and the White House or on Capitol Hill or in the universities is doing that is going to change the situation. Oh. I had the great privilege many, many years ago, many, many, many years ago, maybe 40 years ago, 35 years ago, of ghostwriting the autobiography of Jesse Jackson, a very high-ranking civil rights leader. And we worked together for a long time on this. And he gave some very impressive speeches that I happened to be present at. And he said exactly what should be being said to young black people now. He said to them, you go out and protest against racism all you want. I'll be right there with you at every march. You go out and protest against inequality of pay. I'll be right there with you at every march. But if you stay in school and learn how to plumb a house or fix repair a roof, or put in a new toilet and a new furnace system in a house, you will earn a middle-class wage and be able to support your family in a middle-class way, maybe more. And that's what should be being said. It's not being said, and it's deeply unfortunate.
Well, not only that, but today those jobs are better paying than when he was saying that.
Yeah.
Oh,
those
way
jobs
better
are
paid.
Upper middle class.
They're better, way, way better paid. I mean, I own a lot of property, and when I get the bills for the repairs of my houses, it's unbelievable, the hourly wage that electricians and roofers and so forth get. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Ben, what happened to Jesse Jackson?
He
was a force
20
years ago, and he disappeared.
I know. I hope he's fine. I hope he's living a great life. I liked him a lot.
Well, I think, Ken, that's actually a really good question. I mean, I growing up in New York, me looking at him not as being the most pro-lover of Jews, but still, I don't think he's not tough enough for BLM. He's not, you know,
he's been off the playing field for 15 years.
Yeah, because I don't think they started looking at him like he was any more like, for some reason, Sharpton has remained relevant. One of the biggest anti-Semites, he's remained relevant. But Jesse Jackson, you're right, Jesse Jackson sort of fell off a cliff. Some of it probably had to do with his son going to prison.
And then he had a female thing going on.
So I mean, you know, and he shook down enough people. His time was done for shaking down oil companies.
He lived a very nice life, too. I went to visit him at his house in a very nice neighborhood in Chicago, and he had managed to get a very nice life. I'm going to look him up right now. Judah, you do your magic tricks and so forth while I look him up.
Yeah, but
was a shakedown artist, though. I mean,
Ken, if you ever want to hear the funniest bits in radio, it's by Tim Conway Jr., who's got a great radio show out in California on KFI, and he has a bit called What Did Jesse Jackson Just Say? And if you could figure out this is a true story. If you could figure out what Jesse Jackson says, you win a prize. And it's one of the greatest gags. It's one of the greatest bits. But if you just tuned in, you are listening to The World According to Ben Stein. We're joined by Carrie Gollins, thesimplelifenow.com. We're joined by Ken LaCourt from Media Action
Network.
Network.com. But I want to hear about how your Bed Bath & Beyond thing this week, because every week, every show, we're going to talk about something that's going to help change and do something that's going to change the status quo, because we can't live in status quo. Ken is doing that right now in Marin County this week. He had his Bed Bath & Beyond My Pillow thing. How did that go?
He had a good week. So last week I talked about that we were going to go after My Pillow we're going to go after Bed Bath & Beyond. They were one of the couple companies that pulled down My Pillows because, you know, the Mike Lindell is an insurrectionist and, you know, all the same crap that, you know, they pull their cards out and say, well, you're a somethingist. And so we decided to kind of focus on that. And we've had a good week. We decided to do what we call the basket boycott of Bed Bath & Beyond, where people were literally encouraging them to fill their baskets full, go up to the checkout counter and then say, you know what? I decided not to shop here. Here's a free speech method. Some of the people were telling them, tip the checkout clerk, because it's not their fault that their bosses are doing this. So we had a couple good ones. We had about 20 people up in Northern California abandoning their baskets. We got some good press on that. We've got about 24,000 people signed up to a petition against Bed Bath & Beyond, saying they won't shop there again until they reverse this policy. That brought us a lot more eyeballs on what we're doing. We will expand this nationwide. We've asked people to do it. And you know, we had one guy in Virginia literally standing hours in front of Bed Bath & Beyond by himself. Our goal here, I don't care about pillows. I don't even know if I agree with Mike Lindell on most of the stolen part or what was stolen and what was not. But one side of the political divide in America is having a war. And that's the Democrats have been at war against Republicans and conservatives fought here. And the other side is still like, wow, should we do this? So this is an area where we've decided to focus on and say, you know what? If you keep deciding to bone Republicans every chance you get because 14 people on Twitter said you should, there might be a price to pay for this. So my hope is that we gather some steam, we increase this boycott, we get more people abandoning their carts, that I have enough money where I can hire an investigative reporter to look into Bed Bath & Beyond, where I can, you know, we've got a lot of things on our platter to increase on this. But if Republicans and conservatives don't start pushing back on this cancel culture, we're getting screwed piece by piece.
Well, if they don't, Ken, if they don't push back on a lot of things, and you brought something up and you said, about with the election, with fraudulent stuff in the election, you're not sure this way or the other. The one thing I could say is there wouldn't be such knockdown. If you're okay and you think you won, you don't mind that other people say you didn't. And the fight back wouldn't be as loud and as dangerous and as treacherous, as scary as it is. So for people that question, the only time people that question are forced to shut up, I've learned, is when their questions have a little bit of merit, Gary.
That's fair.
Well, I'm a little pissed off at you, Ken, as a single guy. For 20 plus years, I've been shopping at Bed Bath & Beyond because I can go in there and not think. It's all there. I just have to throw the shit in my cart, kind of like that, but I buy it. I go up there because I need it all. No, yeah, it's a tough one. I'm not a fan of either one, but I get what you're doing. It's true. I don't believe in canceling anyone's voice.
I hate it.
I just don't. I don't. And unless you teach these people, some people, some lessons, that there'll be some pushback, you're never going to change anything.
Yeah, and that's, look, and I'm enough of a libertarian to be like, hey, you got a Bed Bath & Beyond, you don't want his pillows, you don't want that guy because he's left-handed, or, you know, I'm kind of very open on that. But we just keep getting killed and hitting the head as we're playing, you know, we're drinking our Earl Grey tea on the right, saying, oh, well, I'm not sure if we should do anything against Facebook because they have the right to shut down every conservative on their platform. And if we don't start playing back in hardball politics, you know, I quasi joke that my liberal friend said, you know, chain yourself in front of their stores, break their windows and burn the store down. That's what we did. And we got billions of dollars of hard cash and political support. Republicans don't do that. But if we don't start creating some pain by the people who are playing the opponent's game, we're gonna find ourselves in a much, much more minority position.
Yeah, but first of all, to answer your question about Jesse Jackson, he lost some popularity. It was revealed that he had a love child, had a love child for some considerable period of time. It also, in 2017, he announced he'd been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, a disease which had apparently it caused the end of the life of his father. And there doesn't seem to be much after the revelation of that diagnosis. So I imagine he is spending a lot of his time fighting that. As to your other issue about Republicans tying themselves to the front of stores and protesting, I don't think it's going to work. The media has sympathy for Black people. They don't have sympathy for white Republicans. No matter what white Republicans do, the media is not going to have sympathy for us.
There's what if we hire Blacks to do it?
What? I'm sorry?
What if we hire Black people to do the protests?
Good idea. keep coming back, as we say. Anyway, I think the fact is the media is just madly in love with the whole idea that Black people are victims of terrible oppression by us white people, and that we're not going to. And the media has, for a very, very long time, wanted to claim moral superiority over us ordinary people. And I am in the media, too. I guess we're all in the media in a way. But they're in the media at a much higher level than we are. And they like to claim moral superiority. When I first came out to Hollywood, one of the first things I noticed was that people in Hollywood like to get paid a lot, have sex with a lot of girls who are much younger than they are, and claim moral superiority.
Okay, I get it.
And by the way, Ken, I was going to make your suggestion or hire or get a bunch of Jews out there. And I am more than willing to, because I always say that to people, because I say to people, I'm sober. I have alopecia. I'm a conservative that lives in Los Angeles. I am the definition of intersectionality, bitches. Okay. So if you've got a problem with me, you, sir, or madam, are an anti-Semite.
It doesn't matter. We're nothing. Jews are nothing in the political landscape of America right now. Nothing. We have made ourselves irrelevant.
Sorry, Ken?
And expensive.
And by the way, when people say why you canceled, it had nothing to do with it had nothing to do with the fraud thing. It had to do with our discussion about race and religion. But I want to welcome everybody back to the World According to Ben Stein. I'm reading your comments, and Ben, I'm not sure if you're familiar with this situation, but Elon Musk decided to weigh heavily on a stock called GameStop. And basically the stock, I believe it went up over 150% at least. And Robinhood, which is one of the stock trading companies, put the kibosh and stopped the trading on this stock. I don't know if you've read at all about this or know about this, but one company decided to halt trading on a publicly traded company because they feel like Elon Musk, who some say no differently than the heads of other companies do.
You're butchering this.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Go for it, Ken.
A group of guys on Reddit, probably 1,000 or so.
I butchered a lot of things.
Noticed that GameStop, which is a company that's got as good of a business going on right now as Blockbuster. So they're going out of business, right? These are guys like you walk in with a video game and you get your new video game. Well, the internet kind of fixed that. And they saw that some hedge funds were way over leveraged on buying shorts. And so they decided, kind of as a lark, let's put money into GameStop. It will shoot the stock up and the short sellers will get killed on this. And it worked. They literally like GameStop was trading at 20 or 30 for the past couple months. Yesterday it closed at 400. Well, if you know anything about selling shorts, now it's like you didn't just lose your money. You lost 10, 20x times your money. So these huge hedge funds were like getting it taken in the ear. And so then they started like doing things like exactly what Judah was saying. They told Robinhood, one of the bigger trading things that people use for day trading, they somehow convinced them now nobody's admitting this up front, to stop allowing sales of GameStop and some other companies as they tried to scramble this. So from these guys, and then that just made the other guys just more mad. And they're like, I'm buying more and more of this. And what started off as just kind of a the site on Reddit, they would do a lot of crazy stuff like this. What started off as kind of a, hey, let's screw some big hedge fund, has now kind of turned into a little mini political crusade from them. And it's kind of been fun to watch. Literally the stock is, it dropped like 40%. It's over 200 right now. But again, if you're a short seller, you're scrambling because you're getting all your calls pulled in. And so all sorts of just havoc is breaking loose on this. Sorry, Judah.
No. Thank you for reading. And there's one thing we know about Elon Musk. He hates short sellers because there was that guy in his company that kept on short selling Tesla and lost billions of dollars for his hedge fund, Ben. But what are your thoughts on that, if you do? Because people in the crowd are asking you, Ben.
I'm not a speculator. I've never been a speculator. My preferred holding period is forever, as Mr. Buffett said. I learned that from him a long time ago. I've never done well with trading on a short-term basis. I'm not going to give anyone any advice on trading on a short-term basis. For me, it's a spectator sport. I would not get involved in it. If you want a sensible way to invest your money, just buy the broadest possible index. The spiders, SPY is the ticker, and hold on to it for the rest of your life.
God, how I miss watching Cavuto on Saturdays, Ken. And at the end of every show, they would say, you know, everybody would give their stock picks and they would get to Ben. And Ben, they would go, what are you buying, Ben? And he'd go, the index and the spiders every single week, and had people listen to him from the beginning of Cavuto to now, no matter even, you could have speculated on individual stocks, but they would have been incredibly, incredibly, incredibly rich from where their market was to where it is now, had they listened to Ben Stein's investment tips.
You're very kind. Thank you very much.
No, I mean, it's the truth. It was the most fun I had, because they used to look at you like, it's like, remember when they used to look at Warren Buffett during the first tech bubble and go, oh, Buffett's lost his stuff. He didn't get in. Then all of a sudden the bubble crashed and Warren Buffett was still Warren Buffett and everybody else was, eating at the buffet.
If I may say so, I'll say it again. It's an incredibly good idea to save during your working years. Years will come when you won't be able to earn very much, either because your skills have been passed by or the world has changed or your health is questionable. You will be so glad you saved. You'll be so glad if you save in something fairly safe like the spiders, which are not by any means perfectly safe, but they're less risky than speculating in individual stocks. I cannot recommend highly enough, save while you're young and save while you can and save as much as you can. Buffett says, don't save whatever you have left, spend whatever you have left after you do your saving.
Yeah, that's right. And let your money work for you. I mean, my dad never made more than $40,000 a year, but he ended up having a house on the water because his investments did over a long time. And when he passed away, he was a multimillionaire.
That's great.
Because of exactly what you just said.
Fabulous. Great.
Ken, it feels like that, which was such a fun show to watch with Ben on Cavuto. And I can't say
you're very,
enough.
Very kind, Judah. Thank you very much.
One of the worst mistakes they made was doing, in my humble opinion, was going to a live version where Ben couldn't be on because of he didn't like to wake up at 6 a.m. It was just such a fun show to watch on Saturdays. I know you're Gary, I don't know if you're an investor, but.
I have been. I actually, once I became a full-time entrepreneur, I decided I was going to invest in the one thing I could control, and that's myself. So I've been out of the stock market ever since I became a full-time entrepreneur. And that's why my money is better spent on me and my company, because I can control it. It can't be really manipulated. It can be in a sense, but not by me for the most part. And I've known for quite a while that the stock market is rigged. I mean, it's a zero-sum game. It really is. And I'm not saying you can't make money at it. I firmly believe in what Ben says. I always have. I've believed in that investing strategy myself. But for now, all my money goes right back in my company. Every dime I have left over goes right back in.
How much goes into ammunition?
And Kevlar.
Deep six figures, for sure.
My boss asked me once, he said, do you invest in gold? This was Roger Ailes. I was like, I invest in lead.
That's good.
Oh God! What a freaking pioneer! Just an absolute genius. Roger Ailes, and Ken, you were saying there's a great documentary about Roger Ailes on Amazon.
Look, he's a guy who got trashed in the last of his life, and it's been sad to see that he lost that last spin on things, and his life was so twisted around into some smaller parts of it. But there is a documentary called, I believe it's Man in the Arena. And I think his wife had something to do with that and some of his friends. And it's not just a complete, it's not just a complete fellatio of him. It is the Roger Ailes that I knew. And it was from, he was involved. I don't know, Ben, if you knew him back in the Nixon years, and, he produced the Man in the Arena stuff, and he was in, and he produced some of the Apollo landing where you saw where he had to, the one that was coming back and was having a hard time. He had to be able to do a live production for both their triumphant return and at another part in Hawaii, their funeral of the astronauts, if it burned up. So wonderful. And it was the guy that I knew for 30 years. And it's really good. It's on Amazon Prime and Apple TV, I think. Man in the Arena.
I will look for it. That's a phrase is from a famous utterance by Theodore Roosevelt. That was a great favorite of Richard Nixon.
And it's a wonderful speech or soliloquy.
And we are running out of time, but I remember the story, Gary, I wanted to tell you quickly. I will, since you're a cowboy fanatic, I never really had much of a filter, but I was sitting at a bar in Florida, and there was a guy there being a real jerk. His name was Jim Jensen. He played for the Dolphins. Crass Jensen, they called him. And the guy at the bar next to me said to me, he goes, man, that guy's a real ass. And he goes, and he's a real crappy football player too. And I was like, well, who are you to say? He is an ass, but who are you to say? He's like, well, I played a little football. And I said, wow, for who? And he goes, for the Cowboys. And I was like, were you any good? And he said, I had a couple all pros. And he could see me sizing him up and down. And I said, well, what's your name? And he said, Charlie Waters. And I said, Ben, this is a six-time defensive all pro. And I said, no, you're not Charlie Waters. I said, let me see an ID. And he goes, and he showed me his driver's license. It was Charlie Waters. And he said, kid, I got to buy you a beer. This is the only time somebody hasn't believed me and somebody's asked to see my driver's license. And I don't know, I just think as we're going through these difficult times, it's really important to think about fun stories, fun memories, and fun things that we're doing now. And I want one thing from each of you, one good spiritual fun thing each of you has done this week to help themselves.
I can tell you what mine is. Mine is to say to myself, I'm going to put out of mind Biden, Susan Rice, Kamala Harris, Schumer, Pelosi. I'm just going to thank God for giving me the absolutely best wife on the planet, a living, breathing goddess, the finest human being I have ever met. And it's an incredible gift from the Lord God that he has given me the finest human being in the world to be my life companion.
That's amazing. That's beautiful. What about you, Ken?
A couple weeks ago, I was riding my bicycle because I live in Northern California, although it was an e-bike. And a guy on another bicycle came out from behind a parked car onto the street, and I T-boned him. I flipped off and I hit the ground hard, separated my shoulder, cracked some ribs. And I couldn't get past the notion that I went into Marin General Hospital, and I just had an MRI on it again today because it's not healing right. But to be part of, I'm a big individualist guy, and I like thinking of the grid and all of that stuff. But the appreciation and gratitude that I had for living in a society where
I'm sorry, for living in a society.
Where when I hit the ground too hard to fix myself, that I knew that my girlfriend could come and pick me up in the car and take me to the hospital. And all of a sudden there were eight people working on me, and they were cutting off my clothes and putting electrodes on me and giving me x-rays. And, you know, last week on this, we talked about just the appreciation of America, because it's the greatest society that I've ever seen. And I've been around a lot on the globe, but just the concept of, man, I screwed myself up pretty bad for the first time ever in life. And there were people that were standing by there ready to help me and help repair me and stop me from getting in a worse position. I was incredibly grateful. And part of that's local, part of that's the country and the technology that we've invented. And 90% of that stuff is American centric. And it just, you know, as much as we bitch about being zapped off of Facebook and whatnot, we are living in one of the greatest societies ever invented by humankind.
The greatest.
And that blows me away sometimes.
The greatest.
Extremely well said.
I think you're right. The greatest. And we have to be appreciative of that and remember that.
Gary?
Yeah, for me, it's just being in a place. I like living in places like this, obvious, where people don't know, have a clue who I am. I moved here officially about two and a half weeks ago. And I get waved at by 90% of the cars that pass me, and they have no clue who I am. And I wave back and I have a big smile on my face.
That's wonderful. American.
I can't think of a better way to end the show. I want to thank everybody that's on YouTube that's been listening and commenting and following. Remember to steal your friends' phones, like us, download the app on iTunes, download the app on Stitcher, hit the subscribe button on their YouTube channels. We love you. We love you being a part of it. You could find us also at Ben Stein at Substack.com. But I also want to give a shout out to a friend of the show who's going through COVID right now. I don't want to say his name, but a friend of ours who's got pneumonia and COVID. And
we love him. We love him
dearly. And he is in our prayers. And so is everybody in America that is struggling through COVID, through every single difficulty that's been, whatever you're struggling through, we're praying with you and we're praying for you. And we thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Thank you, Ken LaCourte. One more time, tell people where they could find you.
Media Action Network, Kick Back Against the Liberal Media.
Gary Collins.
TheSimpleLifeNow.com.
Ben Stein, if you could, America's Humble Servant, if you could lead us out with song, that would be amazing.
Just a minute. Let me think. Okay. Oh, I've said this one before. I'm going to say it again. Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountains' majesties against the fruited plain. America, America, God shed his grace on thee and crowned thy good with brotherhood from sea to shining sea.
Avenge me, Wolverines. We will see you Tuesday night, same time, 7 p.m. Pacific time. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you.